Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my colleague, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, April 1st, 2015. Thank you once again for joining us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
And today is April 1st.
No, it's not. That's over.
Is it over?
Yeah, no more April Fool's pranks.
All right.
I did another program an hour right in the previous hour in Memphis, and Melody got me at least one time, and she's been chuckling about that with an April Fool prank. And she's not going to be able to. She's out now.
All right.
I don't think you got any more tricks that'll work, Melody.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today. First, let's go ahead and get into the market report. Gold had a nice move today, up $21 at 1204. Excuse me. We had a high at 1209, so pulled back a little bit. Silver was up 32 cents at 1706. Platinum was up almost 2% also, up 22 at 1168, along with palladium up 13 at 751. The U.S. DX today is down 0.22 at 98.20. Crude oil was up $2, 49.59. Paper markets today down. The Dow was down, triple digits most of the day. Crawled back, still down 77 points, 17,698. The Nasdaq was down 20, 48.80. And we have the S&P down 8 at 2,059. 10-year yield dropped to 1.87%. Huge drop in the day for the 10-year yield. And the euro was trading at 108. That was up 0.20. And the fear, we didn't have a chance to talk to the fear and greed index. That dropped. That was, 35, 39 yesterday. Today it is 32, so a big drop. Into the fear category. So again, we'll talk about that, and let's go ahead. And I believe Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs is joining us. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al. Al with us.
Hello, Wendy.
Hey.
What are we going to talk about on this?
Well, we can touch on we only touched on the tip of the allergy iceberg, if you will. So we could talk about the navigating the allergy season. But I wanted to impress upon people, you know, what is the first thing people do when they have allergies? They go to the drugstore, and what do they reach for?
Benadryl.
Yeah.
Nope.
Antihistamines, right?
Antihistamines.
Right, the antihistamine allergy drugs. But do you understand what antihistamines do? They have a specific function in our bodies, and when we shut them off, what are we doing? Anybody know?
Well, we're probably weakening our immunity system. It'd just be a guess. Is that true or false?
Well, you're generally speaking, yes. But actually, everyone has histamine receptors. Science calls them H1 receptors, and they're all over our body. They are on the smooth muscle cells, which line your intestines. They're on the cells that line the cavities of your heart. They're on lymph vessels, central nervous system, the spinal cord and brain, and, of course, your blood vessels. So histamine is kind of important, wouldn't you say?
I agree.
Okay, good.
But some people say, what's more important than even histamines? And the answer, at least in some people's mind, is money. So if they have to get rid of the histamines, if that's a requirement of making money, blah, blah, blah. And that's what we're dealing with, I assume. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. Well, histamines, as you did point out, do have a part in your immune system response with the white blood cells. This tends to regulate as well as your physiological functions, but it also has a lot to do with neurotransmitters in the brain, too. It helps regulate thyroid, your digestive tract as well. And doctors tend to recommend antihistamines for the common cold and allergy stuff, hives and things like that. So people actually can experience, if they use antihistamines, they can experience physiological alterations in the body. So they also have antihistamines and antipsychotic drugs, which also promote insomnia, and they have antihistamines in insomnia medication, which promotes more insomnia. So a lot of the over-the-counter products, well, I think one of the biggest sellers is the Claritin product. People need to really research their products carefully because people complain that when they use some antihistamine products like this over the counter, they tend to gain weight because it does disrupt your delicate balance with your thyroid. And you can pick up some weight. So also researchers on the Claritin say the side effects to such allergy medicines can offer rash and swelling, itching, nervousness, rapid heartbeat, weakness, stomach pain, dizziness, diarrhea, and even respiratory distress. So people need to research their antihistamine approach very carefully. And I tend to go along with some of the natural ways to dealing with the allergy symptoms. And there's some authors, and they're also physicians, Christine Gerdesat and David Leopold. They agree that foods can help you avoid a lot of the allergy symptoms. They say instead of creamy soups, select soups with clear broth, no cream or dairy. And instead of sour cream dips, select the hummus dips, no dairy, because dairy is a mucus-producing food. It traps more of the pathogens in, and it just agitates an immune system response with a lot of mucus and kicks up your histamines, actually, in the body. So more omega-3 fatty acids, more antioxidants will tone down inflammation response that a lot of people, you know, tend to complain about with their allergy symptoms. So there's lots people can do with just their diet. And then, of course, there are some herbs that help with the inflammation and draining the sinuses and reducing inflammation in the glands and so forth and so on. So there's a lot people can do instead of going the allopathic route this allergy season.
Well, you know, one of the things that you certainly imply, and I know I am going to assume you're going to agree with, is that the conventional treatments, the antihistamines that we may take for allergies, ultimately, they're only treating symptoms.
Right.
They're not providing cures. And that is the fundamental business model of pharmaceuticals across the country. They don't tend to cure us of any diseases. If anything, from their perspective, they'd like us to have more diseases so we buy more of their products. They will suppress symptoms, but they're not providing cures.
Well, yeah, it's always about disease management with them, absolutely. And so it's can also give you the illusion of a healing. You know, your they tone down the symptoms a little bit, so you feel a little better, so you think it's working. There's a lot of people that, you know, watch the pollen reports this time of year. The National Allergy Bureau has them. You can go to pollen.com, even download some phone apps if you want to keep on top of the pollen out there, because $18 billion a year spent on allergy treatments over the counter, the allergy shots, which can be very dangerous, can cause respiratory arrest, as you probably are aware. And, you know, it's more of a problem when you combine all the money that's spent on allergies. It's more than cancer, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's all put together. So we've got half of the nation having allergy responses, and some
and no
experts
one is
like Dr.
giving cure. We're spending more money on allergies than we do
right.
on cancer. I believe you said heart attack, a couple of other fundamental disease types. We're spending more
right.
money than these others, and no one is providing us with a cure. Is that simply because a cure is impossible, or
no,
is it evidence that nobody wants to cure what is essentially a golden goose, a caged cow?
Yeah, well, there's probably going to be, you know, some cases that are really acute and don't respond to, let's say, changing in your diet, maybe using some herbs to help drain away pressure and fluids and things. But for a majority of the folks out there, they're more powerful than they think with just, you know, making sure they're not eating foods that will promote an allergy response. You got to read your labels, really, because so many products have hidden dairy and are made in factories where nuts are present, and a lot of people are allergic to nuts and dairy. Those are big allergy foods. So basically your allergy response may be because you're allergic to your diet, not so much pollen. So you got to keep track of these things, kind of feel it out and see what is prompting you to have an allergy. I've seen people, Al, just get off all dairy products in their diet. That means no, you know, butter, no yogurt, no ice cream, no cheese. And they, you know, they get the substitute, maybe soy, almond, or coconut milk substitutes. And they swear their allergies all go away. And they can kind of sail through, you know, spring and summer without any bumps in the road, without any problems at all. And they are just amazed that it was really their body had a tipping point. And it was really the foods they were eating, and then you layer in some pollen, and bam, you know, then they had some issues. So once you get some control over what's really bothering the system, and you get control over that, you can sidestep a lot of these issues. Now, at Apothecary, it was what we do this time of year is, you know, people call and they get the Echinacea Deluxe. It's really our sinus formula. And it helps shrink the swollen passages and drain the sinuses. And a lot of people sidestep the infection and having to get antibiotics. And then we also have a pneumonia kit. See if it travels south and you get bronchitis. There's some expectorants that are natural. And you can also clear away the pathogen that's the infection there with some herbs, powerful herbs to, you know, boost your immunity. So there are some natural solutions that won't break the bank financially, and they won't weaken the immune system, and actually strengthen it. So that's important, I think.
So what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is that the kind of solutions that you're able to offer are mm-hmm. going to make us less susceptible to allergies, while the kind of solutions that we can get from the major pharmaceutical companies are actually going to break down our immune system and make us more susceptible to allergies. Am I understanding correctly?
Right. Well, actually, a lot of the over-the-counter products are not cleared for test. They're not tested by the FDA. Anybody can go get the recipe from the CDC on making a lot of the over-the-counter products. And as long as they follow the monograph, the recipe book that has ingredients that the FDA has already approved for certain products, they can jump in there and be a manufacturer and get it on the shelf, and nothing's done about it. And of course, unless there's a recall, there's a serious problems with the, you know, the product. So what they're doing on over-the-counter products is, you know, there's like over 300,000 of them, and they can't keep up with it all, and who's making what and this and that. So you really take a risk these days, which are over-the-counter products. And even Johnson & Johnson and some of these major pharmaceutical companies that do make a lot of over-the-counter products, they've been running into production issues where there's been a lot of fungus and bacteria and mold in the formulas caused. And even, I think, at one point there was a report where there was heavy metals found in some of the children's Tylenol or Benadryl products. So people need to realize that the FDA is not regulating that at all.
Well, let me ask you this. When we talk about they found heavy metals, for example, or fungus or whatever unexpected pollutant is in their vaccines or their over-the-counter medicines, who found them? Were they found by Johnson & Johnson in-house doing proper research, or were they found by people on the outside who's been subjected to the product and they were able to prove that the product was defective and bring it to Johnson & Johnson's attention? And the reason I'm saying this is because the way I understand the law, Johnson & Johnson, take care. The law gives them a certain amount of legal immunity. I can't be sued if they put horse manure in the product they're selling. But nobody can sue them. All right, or well, at least in theory. All right, they have ability. So they don't have, if that's true, they don't have an incentive to identify and correct problems themselves. They have, they're only responding perhaps when the public figures out there's a problem. Oh yeah, let's get more manure on products public one.
Well, Al, you're right. It was a consumer. It was the consumer base that brought these problems to Johnson & Johnson's attention. They noticed that the product either looked or smelled or tasted funny. So, yes, then it was reported, and apparently, you know, they cooperate with the recall and all that, and it's a quality control issue. They got to figure out what went wrong, what broke down in the process. And I guess that can happen to anybody, but at the same time, people just assume, that those over-the-counter drugs are, you know, just like the pharmaceutical drugs. They're, you know, in a quality control lab and there's no contamination. Everybody's wearing white suits, hats, gloves, booties, you name it. But it's not the case. It's really not the case. So
I think another part of that assumption, is the over-the-counter remedies. You don't even need a prescription for them, so you should be able to assume that these are so safe they don't even have to prescribe them. They should be the safest drugs that are out there. You see what I'm saying?
Well, aspirin is grandfathered. If it were discovered today, it's acetylsalicylic acid, it would need a prescription because it's that powerful in the body. It causes a lot of disruption in the immune system and in the platelet count. That's why it lowers fever and there's bleeding issues. It thins blood. So and just because it's over the counter, as you pointed out, doesn't mean a whole hill of beans. So people need to be more discerning, a little bit more savvy out there when they're selecting things. And I just like to empower people with some basic common sense and some things they can try first and see if they can't, you know, just actually get rid of the problem without having to manage it season to season with a bunch of drugs.
I understand. What are the suppose I had a serious allergy. What are the, a persistent allergy, what are the chances that I can essentially effect a cure? Might take a couple of years or whatever, but is it possible for me to cure that allergy, or am I only going to be able to perhaps mitigate the symptoms? Do I have the allergy forever?
No. I mean, well, what you want to do is you want to keep a food journal for at least 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks is better, because you can look back and see what you've eaten in the last couple of days to see where it's kicked up an allergy response for you. A lot of people are just amazed at what they're allergic to, and not everybody has the same allergic reaction to a food. If you take milk, for instance, people can have eczema, psoriasis. They can have dark circles under their eyes as the only symptom of a dairy allergy. And while other people may get chronic ear infections, throat infections, sinusitis, and bronchitis from milk, because it accumulates in the system, and then your body, there's that tipping point, and then you have a breakdown in filtering, because it clogs up the organs, the glands, and all the filters in there. So, I mean, if you do that, plus you could use some natural things that clear away the toxins and balance the system. We've got a formula called the Immune System Balancer for people who have a sensitive, hyperactive allergy response. So there's a lot that people can do to strengthen them and change their lifestyle and avoid those things that are really, you know, kicking it up for them.
Why don't you give some contact information, Wendy, and we're going to have to move on to our commercial break.
Sure. They could call for a free product catalog. It's 866-229-3663, Apothecary Herbs, 866-229-3663, or visit the website, thepowerherbs.com.
All right, that's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. Quality, and I will be back in a moment to take a break for some commercials. Please stay tuned for Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, what's next is today we had a report that came out showing that U.S. businesses slowed their pace of hiring last month. The payroll processor, ADP, said that the U.S. companies added a seasonally adjusted 189,000 jobs last month. However, that was certainly below their expectations. They were looking at about an increase of 250,000, so quite a discrepancy there. And we also know that the government's numbers, the quote-unquote official numbers, certainly don't always match ADPs as they continue to lie about them and make them sound better than what they really are. That's still a big drop in this report. We also had U.S. factories. They slowed. And the Institute for Supply of Management, a trade group of purchasing managers, said today that it's the index slipped to 51.5 in March from 52.9 in February. And this is the fifth straight drop. Yes, we still are above 50, which indicates some sort of expansion. But we certainly see a drag on the U.S. manufacturers for several reasons, falling oil prices, of course, the stronger dollar, and even the impact with the West Coast shutdown, the ports that was shut down due to the strike that created a backlog of shipments. So you have a, you know, some things that, but that didn't happen for the past 5 months, and we're seeing a decline for the past 5 months. There's some other reports that are showing that manufacturing has downshifted in recent months. And last week, it was the orders for long-lasting goods. That dropped in February, and that was the third decline in 4 months. So, again, we're seeing signs that these numbers certainly aren't strong numbers for an economy that is improving and for the Federal Reserve looking to begin increasing rates. So, U.S. construction out, that spending slipped for the second month, month in February. And so, again, more signs. The Commerce Department says construction spending fell 0.1% in February after a revised 1.7% drop in January. So, I mean, the reports go on and on and on. Even the auto sales are showing the slowdown for March, and at a time when there's 0% interest for these car manufacturers and the subprime loans that are going to auto purchasers and lower oil prices, you know, you'd think that at this point in time they'd be out there, spending that money, as Americans love to spend money, but we're not seeing it.
Well, it's not just here in the United States, and that's part of that, and that's a big part of the picture. We can hear some adverse news relative to what's happening in the United States economy, and that's interesting, particularly because we live in the United States. But all by itself, it's not controlling. It's mostly just kind of interesting and perhaps even anomalous. It doesn't prove anything. But here's an article. Headline is Trade Dying, Plunging Baltic Dry Index. And commodity prices collapsing. Global slowdown continues. And the article, it refers to the Baltic Dry Index is a measure of shipping. How many tons of items are being shipped from Europe to the United States, from the United States to Europe, from China to the United States and Europe? They track how many tons are moving by boat. And it's down to record low levels, or at least nearly record low levels. And what that indicates is the world is not buying from China the way it has in the past. It has fallen. They're not buying from the United States. They're not buying from Europe. Europe is not buying from us. We're not buying from China to the same degree we did 5 or 10 years ago. It's evidence of a global recession or even a global depression. And that's important because if the problem is global, if we have only a United States problem, okay, maybe we ought to be able to fix that. But if we have a global problem, that's something that the United States cannot unilaterally correct. Here's another one from the Associated Press, gloomy China, Japan data, aid to pressure for stimulus. China and Japan reported gloomy industrial data on Wednesday, adding to pressure on leaders of the world's second and third largest economies to launch new stimulus. This is simply another illustration of the idea that the problems, whatever problems we may see in the United States, they are not unique to the United States. They are global in nature, and they may be even worse in other countries than they are here. And this article, again, Gloomy China, Japan Data, Add Pressure for Stimulus, they're saying they need to create more inflation. That's how they'll stimulate their economy. All right. They go on, and the article continues. It talked about the Central Bank of Japan has been pumping trillions of yen, tens of billions of dollars, into the Japanese economy through asset purchases aimed at keeping interest rates low and stimulating inflation. All right, got to have that inflation. But economists say government action alone cannot fix Japan's problem with weakening demand. In other words, if the world stops buying, you can't hide it. You can't conceal it. You can't just kick it down the road by issuing more paper yen or paper dollars or paper yuan. There is a fundamental reality, and the reality ultimately controls over the fiction that's been perpetrated by means of fiat currencies. The reality is for whatever reason, the people of the world are not buying as many products as they did a few years ago. And that's certainly a hallmark of an economic recession and or depression. People stop buying, guess what? You're going into a recession, maybe a depression. One of the things about this is the world wants more inflation. They're scared to death of deflation. Inflation is believed to stimulate the economy. I won't argue that that's necessarily true or even beneficial in the long run, but it's certainly believed that inflation will stimulate the economy. And therefore, most of the countries of the world, they want inflation insofar as their currency relates to the dollar. If they are inflated, we get deflated. Our dollar becomes more valuable when theirs becomes less valuable. It's that teeter-totter effect again. All right, got half a dozen fiat currencies on one end of the teeter-totter, U.S. dollar on the other end. This balance, when they go up, we go down. When we go down, they go up. If they get inflation to stimulate their economy, we get deflation, which will slow, or at least should slow, our economy. One of the reasons this strikes me as important is that the government's been doing something strange over the last couple of years. And I won't say that it's entirely incomprehensible. I don't doubt that the government and the central banks and the forces behind fiat currencies everywhere hate gold. They hate it. All right? It creates an evidence that the dollar is becoming less valuable. When the price of gold goes down, it's evidence that the dollar is becoming more valuable. That's deflation. Deflation is one of the hallmarks, typically, of a depression. And the point I'm trying to illustrate, I'm trying to get to here, is the idea that as much as government hates gold, if they want inflation, they have to let the price of gold go up. All right? As long as they're suppressing the price of gold, they are creating evidence of deflation. And it seems to me that, you know, it's one of these things, it's like a shotgun marriage. You may not be crazy about your spouse, but you're going to get married. You understand? Got that shotgun there. Yeah, I do. Okay, I do. The government's going to have to say, I do, to gold. They're going to have to say, all right, let the price rise in order to inflate the dollar. We can't argue that the dollar is being dramatically inflated as long as the price of gold is being suppressed. And my point is that it's surprising to me that the government has let the price of gold or caused the price of gold to decline over the last several years, when in fact it's a primary evidence of inflation, a rising price of gold, inflation. Everybody's talking about it. The whole world is trying to get at more inflation. And at the same time, at least the United States is trying to suppress the price of gold. That's evidence of deflation. I think they're going to have to bend. I think they're going to have to break. I think they're going to have to say, okay, let gold go up. I don't mean that they'll let it skyrocket necessarily, but I'm going to say that they're going to go back to where gold's going to go up to 20% a year. And I think the moment may be in, we may see the onset of that. We may see the onset of that this year. I'm not guaranteeing, I'm not, again, I don't give prophecy, I just play with what strikes me as the logic of the situation. But government, if they want inflation, they've got to let the price of gold rise. I'm looking forward to that happening this year. And if I am correct, you know, it may be a good year for gold.
Again, it shows you the rock and the hard place that they're in, because you could not have the paper markets rise to the levels they have risen with high gold prices. I mean, it's a conflicting report. I mean, you can have, we've seen gold rise at the same time as the stock market rises at times, but not to the degree that we've seen the market go to over 18,000, the S&P and the NASDAQ hitting all these highs. It's psychologically, you know, as gold is looked at more as a fear protector, you know, people turn to gold as, you know, you see things uncertain and so forth. So they, as much as they hate to have no inflation and gold as an indicator of that, they had to have low gold prices in order to fool everyone, that the economy is improving.
Well, they have a choice to
one
make.
One of them.
And if they want,
and you're right, that's the rock
and
the hard place.
Let the price go up. Price of gold has to go up if we're going to have inflation.
Yep.
All right, and not just, it's not just a matter of whether we have real inflation or we have imagined inflation. It has to do with the psychology of the American people. Do we think we're in a period of inflation?
Right.
All right, and we might be fooled. Could be that we're in deep. I mean, right now, for the moment, we are probably, you can make a stronger argument that we are in a period of deflation than you can argue that we're in inflation. I don't know exactly where we are. I may never know exactly where we are. But the important point is, what do people believe? Where do the people believe they are? And the government argues that they have to believe we're inflation for the economy to be stimulated. People have to think the dollar is losing value to cause them to spend it more freely. And I'm arguing that as long as they suppress the price of gold, they can't make a convincing argument. They can't fool everybody into believing we are in a period of inflation and therefore be stimulated, go out and buy something. They need to let gold go up if they want to put this, if they want to strengthen the economy, from my perspective. Now, is it God's truth to say so? That's not my point. I'm not going to make that argument. I'm saying this is, this to me is an interesting perspective, an interesting possibility. I think it has to be, logically for me, it has to be true, but we'll watch and see.
There, to me, there's more evidence there's inflation out there. Go buy something. Go buy out there when people are buying $200 and $300 tickets to go to football games and to concerts. You know, you have 60, 70-year-old rock bands out there where people still pay hundreds of dollars to see these old people. And, hey, I'm not that far away from those ages, but see them out there performing. I mean, there's more money in the country.
With their walk.
You pay $400 and $500 for a telephone. People stand in lines.
Yeah, they do.
Tennis
some
shoes,
people
three,
do,
four, $500. I don't see anything going down. Anything that goes down
price,
in price.
Oil. Price of oil has gone, fallen over half.
Yeah,
in last year.
Okay, you named one. I can name 101. I can name 101 products that have gone up, and what they do also go to the grocery store. Oh, that product down yet? Get the that means it has a smaller box. Oh, gee, you used 12 ounces to this box of cereal. Now you're getting 10. The box might be bigger. It fools people, but the product itself and what people are paying is actually gone up. Cars, you name it. I don't see anything that's going down in price. There's more money out there, and so yeah, I get it. I see the dollar. I see the oil, and yeah, you're right, those are deflationary signs. But when you say that you're looking at you know, whether we're questioning whether we're inflation or deflation, I can easily argue more inflation than deflation.
Well, you can make the argument. All I'm trying to say is I don't know what the truth of the matter is, but you can't compel, you can't fool people and say, ha, 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 we're in a period of deflation, or excuse me, a period of inflation to stimulate the economy, but the price of gold is going down. That is a contradiction that I think people are aware of. And no matter how well they understand it, I think subjectively it pushes them to a point where they say, I don't believe we're in inflation. They might say, okay, 60% inflation. But maybe we need 70, 80, 90% have to believe in inflation in order to really stimulate the economy. And my only point is, I think the government has an interest in raising the price of gold. They may not like it, they may not want to do it, but if they want to stimulate the economy, I think it has to be done. What else has to be done? We have to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver for all your gold and silver coin needs. We're talking about, you know, prices of gold. The world seems to believe, and I won't argue that the belief is rational, but the governments of the world certainly believe that they need to stimulate their economies because they are all diminished, declining, in a recession. Maybe a depression. The evidence is not simply relative to the nation of the United States. It appears to be a global phenomenon. All of the nations that have fiat currency are reacting to this slowdown the same way. They think they need to inflate their currency in order to cause, to make their products more attractive on the international market. If they inflate their currency, the yen, the yuan, the dollar, if we can inflate our fiat currency and make it worth less, then you can sell a product that's worth a dollar or $5 or $100 million. If it's made in the United States, we can sell that product more easily to Europe or to China or to Japan or to wherever if the value of the dollar is seen to be inflating and losing value. When the dollar loses value, $100,000 is no longer $100,000. It's nominally the same number, but in terms of purchasing power, it is diminished. That means it's easier to buy our products. Now, the whole idea that Japan and China and the United States and Europe were all fighting to have the most worthless. When we all try to inflate our currency, we're saying the nations are sitting around and Japan is saying, you should buy from us because our currency is really worthless. And China says, oh, no, our currency is even more worthless than Japan's. And the United States, in theory, when it's pushing inflation, is sitting back, oh, no, you're both crazy. We have the most worthless currency. And Europe said, you're nuts. The euro, that's the currency that's really worthless. And we are fighting to create a worthless currency in the minds of the world. How can that go well? You can see the end of this argument pushing for inflation. You can see that the end is going to be some sort of a disaster when we finally prove to the satisfaction of everyone in the world that our currency is totally worthless. And Japan proves that the yen is totally worthless. And China proves the yuan is totally worthless. And the euro is seen to be totally worthless. And then, ha-ha, the race will have been won. Or at least concluded. What I'm trying to illustrate is this whole idea of fighting for the most inflated currency, the most worthless currency. You know, this is just a kind of insanity. And we talk about this insanity, different varieties of this insanity, talk about it on the program on a fairly regular basis. And we tend to trace this back to the idea that we have a fiat currency. We're telling people the madness is inherent in those green pieces of paper in your wallet that you treat as money. And it's not money. It's just a damn debt instrument. It's a currency, but it's not a money. And very few people understand. Very few people understand the difference. You know, in the Constitution of the United States, and I can't point to the specific article and clause right this moment. I don't have it in front of me. But it does say that the United States alone, the government of the United States, has the power to coin money. It says coin money. It doesn't say print money. And this is no small thing. Right? When we say coin, we mean take a disc of metal of a fixed weight and purity that's made out of, in the case of money, gold or silver, and forge it. Cast it, perhaps, a problem, but forge it, hammer it down to where it has a particular image on it, a particular size, a particular quality, and then you coin money. Insofar as the Constitution uses the term coin money, they're telling you that the money that they have in mind must be metallic. It doesn't say print money. There is no constitutional power to print money. Print is something you do on paper. Coin means metal. The government has moved us away from our metallic currencies of gold and silver. They took us out of domestic silver in 1933, took us out of domestic gold in 1933, took us out of domestic silver in 1968, last time they redeemed any silver certificates for silver dollars, for physical silver, and took us out of international gold market when they closed the gold window on foreign-held dollars in 1971. We're operating with a pure fiat currency, and that currency is loaned into circulation. It is a debt instrument. It's not an asset. It's not a payment. It's merely a promise to pay that is never, ever kept, at least not by the people that issue the currency. And yet they have convinced us, oh, This is money. This is real. You can take these pieces of paper, go buy yourself a new Cadillac or a new house. You got a stack of paper. You have a stack of promises to pay. You have a pile of debt instruments rather than assets. And you can buy a house or a car or a new TV with debt instruments. Debt is wealth. That's the way the system operates right now. It is operating on the presumption that debt is wealth. It's insane. It's not true. It can't be true. It's not just a question of, well, if we just tinker with it a little bit, it could be true. No, it's not true. It'll never be true. We have been seduced into accepting these worthless debt instruments and treating them, regarding them, defining them as money. Say, oh, that's money. No, it's not. Money is gold and silver. All right? Money is physical gold and silver. And insofar as you want money in your life, you need to think very seriously as to whether or not you are going to continue to be fooled by this notion that these pieces of paper are money. Yeah, they spend. I get that. They seem to work. And everyone is fooled by it. But in the end, they are not money. They are only currency. We can get by with it for the moment, but they are inherently flawed. They have inherent contradictions. They are inherently insane. It's the idea that the government can fool us into believing something that simply isn't true. And all they have to do is smile and, well, this is money. No, it's not. And once you understand that, you reach a point in your thinking where you say, wait a second, I'm going to start acquiring some money. For the moment, I can still trade these worthless pieces of paper for real money. I can start to save my wealth in the form of real money, not worthless pieces of paper. As you understand that, as you begin to understand that, and not just understand it, but believe it, because much of what I'm trying to tell is not simply hard to understand for the average person. You try to explain to them that a $100 bill, that's not money. You try to communicate to the average guy, and he thinks you're nuts. But he's going to understand differently. He's going to understand the same way the people of Germany came to understand that a mark during the Weimar Republic, a paper mark, was not money. They thought it was money. Well, it's a mark. We can spend it. We can buy bread. We can buy whatever. But believing that worthless piece of paper was money, they wound up in circumstances. I've seen photographs where they had the streets littered with marks. And the street sweeper is out there pushing piles of these marks into the drains along the curbs in the street and flushing them down the sewer. It was at that moment or thereabout that the people all of a sudden said, what? What? The mark isn't money. How can that be? And then strange things began to happen in their society, which included the rise of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. The reaction to discovering you've been fooled, you've been deceived, you've been hornswoggled into believing that pieces of paper are money, when the truth finally emerges, those who don't have any real money, which is gold and silver, are in big, big trouble. And they become so desperate that they will support any clown, including Adolf Hitler, who rises to power, saying, look, I'll put a chicken in every pot. It's one of the consequences of investing in the lie that pieces of paper are money. And it's right at the moment. Seems like a safe bet. Seems like a safe investment. But the day is coming when people are going to learn it's not. And again, it's part of the reason. You know, there's stories. I don't know the truth of the story. Its story has been told as truth. I've heard it a couple of times. I don't know if it's absolutely true or not, but it illustrates a point. There's a story of a bellboy who worked in a significant hotel in Berlin during the Weimar Republic. And while he was there, one of the guests tipped him a gold coin, presumably an ounce of gold, at one point. One guest, he just happened to be a bellboy, carried the luggage up there for this guy, up to the guy's hotel room, and the guy gave the kid an ounce of gold. Well, the kid didn't go out and spend it as fast as he could. He saved it. And after the currency collapsed, after the Weimar Republic collapsed and the marks, the German marks under the Weimar Republic, they collapsed into, well, they went up into hyperinflation and became worthless. According to the story, this kid was, what had been a bellhop, was able to buy the whole hotel for an ounce of gold. The ounce of gold he'd received as a tip, you know, a couple years earlier, was enough to buy the whole hotel. It illustrates the story, or the story illustrates that if you're hanging on to real money, you're going to have a great advantage over people who have stored their wealth in the form of paper dollars or paper stock certificates or paper bonds. Now, we are in a situation that is at least similar to. We don't have hyperinflation. That's what got the Weimar Republic. They succumbed to hyperinflation. We don't have that right now. Whether we get to it remains to be seen. But the strong probability is that the fiat dollar is going to die. All fiat currencies croak, and generally in about two generations, maybe three. Fiat dollar is due to take a incredible swan dive. Right? It's going to happen now, when, I don't know. But when it does, those of you who are sitting on some gold coins are going to find some spectacular values. You're going to be able to buy cars and homes and land and maybe businesses and even factories, depending on how much gold you have. And it will be a function of, nobody knows what the prices of things are going to be under these worst-case scenarios, but whatever the price is, it is unlikely, if not impossible, that people will accept mere paper as payment for their land, you know, whatever other property they may have. They're going to want something tangible. They will have learned, the same way the people of Germany learned that the paper mark was worthless. They're going to learn, these paper dollars are also worthless, and when they reach that moment of understanding, and it will come, it'll be astonishing to people. They will say, oh, that can't be, it's not possible. They will be in shock. But after that shock begins to wear off a little bit, they will still be desperate. And the people who believed in paper currency they'll make spectacular sales. Sell things of incredible value for relatively small amounts of gold. If you have gold, if you have silver, you may be able to prosper. You can at least have a higher probability of surviving. If you don't have it, you'll be in big trouble. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time. We will be back tomorrow. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, I want to thank all of you for listening. And in the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.